Right, so this is episode 21, season 4 now, of the Personal Development Podcast. I'm joined with two good friends, one my age, one who some of our listeners are familiar with, Marley, and another a family friend that I kind of grew up in and around, Hamza. So Marley, give us a tiny bit of an introduction to yourself and then we'll move on to Hamza.
Okay, yeah, my name's Marley, been on here for, you know, good couple of episodes. Yeah, good couple of episodes all the way back to 2018. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this episode. Yeah, this is, it's a beautiful conversation to have.
Beautiful conversation about transformation. Something that hopefully we'll all know a lot more about. I think Marley knows a lot about himself. And then Hamza, tell us a tiny bit about yourself then.
Okay, so I'm at Eunice in primary school, but obviously there's an evident age gap, and I don't know how we met though, because our mums, yeah.
I remember, it was Hamza's a family friend. My mum needed someone to take me. I went to the same primary school as Hamza school, and my mum didn't really know your mum, but your mum offered. She's like, okay, I don't really know, but why not? That's how I started coming around to Hamza's house. I remember every day, every day after school. And I remember there was one time, you were tiny at this point. I was tiny at this. I was still at primary school, where it was one of those moments where adults look at children and you're like, all right, I'm a child. You were just sitting on my lap. I was sitting on your couch. You were just sitting on my lap. And then all of the adults kind of paused and I'm like, oh, how adorable. That I remember that clearly for some reason.
I actually remember you teaching me how to play football.
Yes. I remember that as well. Yeah. So I grew up in and around Hamza's house for a period of time. Me and Marley, well, I'm 22, Marley's 23.
I'm 15.
You have, yeah, the honour of being by far the youngest. How old was I when I started this? 18. Only 3 years. Okay. So yeah, you are 3 years the youngest person to ever have appeared on this podcast. Mm-hmm. And how did we come round to it?
I think we're sitting at a wedding.
Hamza came to me with this topic, and I don't want to massage your ego, but it may be necessary. Okay. I was impressed. Hamza came to me with this topic, and he was just saying, okay, there's a lot that I'm figuring out at the minute. And you're someone, I don't know, this, I'm putting words in your mouth at this point, but maybe you're someone that in being a bit older than me has gone through some of these stuff. Speak to me about that. What were we saying at the wedding? What did we get at where I was like, okay.
So I was talking to you about what the transformations I'm going through right now. I.e., you know, going into year 11, really having to knuckle down, really having to change the way I am in order and change my whole, like, stop certain stuff in order to focus on studies.
Okay.
And leave certain people behind.
Okay. So we're looking at a real identity shift.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at a real identity shift, and that came through. And it came through partly because I feel like I went through somewhat similar, not like for like, but somewhat similar at a certain age. Now, I've had a lot of context with you. I'm also going back to parts of myself that resonated with where you were at when I was at a similar age, but some of our audience may not have.
Yeah.
So if we're painting this picture, I think we're going to start with who is Hamza Nazir? And what is going on? What do we feel like needs to die off from the person that is Hamza Nazir? And what do we feel like needs to grow? And why? That's what we're hopping to. That's what we're hopping to. Who is Hamza Nazir?
Can we answer that?
Yeah.
So, I come from South Asian heritage. I'm in year 11 right now. And I come from a Muslim background. Both my parents are Muslim. And yeah, I've grown up in and around mosques and very, very involved in a lot of Islamic stuff. Mm. I go to a state school in, it's in like Carshalt and Sutton area, a bit out of the area, but my mum works there, so that's why I do go there. And you know what, right now, as I said before, you know, I'm really starting to work hard for these GCSEs. Yeah, that's a bit about myself. I play a lot of football. I like a lot of sports. I like Formula One. I like football. I like basketball. Yeah, but up until this season, this year, I was playing football quite competitively. But no, I've stopped it now. But yeah.
So why is this a transformation for yourself? Why you've spoken to me about okay who you are. South Asian heritage, South London, Muslim, at school, playing football. Why is it not okay, calm? We continue. Why is there a transformation? What's going on there?
So, obviously, you know, there's always room for improvement. And so, in order to better myself academically, you know, I'm going through. And thing is, I haven't been, my mum hasn't been that mum to be like, you need to do this, you need to do that. You're not playing no football, you're not doing this. You know, she's always been like, okay, you know what, I'll let him do this, I'll let him do that. You know, let him test the waters. Or but this year, you know, she's really like, she's proper getting on to me now. And you know, and because I haven't been because she's thought, okay, you know what, I've let him do all this for the last couple of years, you know. And maybe this year he might push it. And this year we need to knuckle down. I can't have any mishaps. And yeah.
What are you hearing, Marley? Can you relate?
A very mature young man.
Trust. He's 15. Like, obviously, egos are staying in the correct place. But yeah, when you were talking to me about this, I was like, oh, right. I was genuinely just like, okay.
What are you hearing? I need some of this, mate. I need something. Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of poise.
Yeah?
Yeah, a lot of poise, a lot of, you know what needs to be changed, you know kind of where you're going, you know what needs to be dropped out.
But it's not as easy as I make it out to seem. Do you know what I'm saying? I can understand, I can picture what I need to do, but doing that is a whole different story.
It's not easy, and that's part of why I wanted to have this conversation, not just with you, but publicly, potentially, publicly, because, as I was saying, I had a chat two weeks ago with Hamza, and one of the things that I told him to do, I'll give the quote. I said, okay, I was watching this video, and there was this Christian that was talking to me about healing. And he quoted a chapter from the Bible. Obviously, Hamza let you know he's Muslim. I've let you know previously I'm Muslim. So although I can look at stuff like this and say, okay, I understand what you're saying, and I can use similar for myself, I'm not Christian. But there was this quote that he said from the Bible, and it goes as follows. It's 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 2. This is what they say. They say, blessed be God, even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort, who comforteth us in all our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those which are in any trouble by the comfort wherewith we ourselves are comforted of God. So that's in the Bible. That's what they believe. That's what they follow. And then this guy went and explained that. And he said, what does this mean? He said, when you're going through stuff in life, and this is what I couldn't agree more with, when you're going through stuff in life, God helps us through our pain if we want to heal. And once a man or a woman has healed from his or her pain, they can then help others to heal from their pain with the same healing that God provided for him or her. That's why I wanted to make what is a difficult topic that I think we all go through public. Because I know, Hamza, you're one 15-year-old of hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And I don't know if there are 15-year-olds listening to this, but someone may listen to this and be like, okay, I can relate. Okay, what you're saying, Hamza, is really speaking for me and where I'm at. And actually, I really needed to hear some of the solutions that you came to, some of the realizations that you came to. And what you'll realize is it's not just the 15-year-olds. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm probably going to be listening back to this, thinking, what can I extract? Thinking, okay, that helped me out. Because although you're younger, we spoke about this, although you're younger, that comes with a lot of benefits. What you realize is after you go through a certain amount of these transformations, you just get so in your head about who you are. And that can hold you back. And a lot of people try and go back to that freedom that they were at when they were younger, when they were just able to just be themselves. Didn't have to think, what does my mom need of me? What does society need? All of that. So I remember when I was having this chat with Hamza, one of the things that he said was, I know I'm the young buck here. I'm younger than, and this is how we'll dive into further conversations. I'm younger than both yourself and Marley. I don't want this to feel like you two are just schooling me or you two are just talking at me. And I'm going to flip that on its head. You've heard that quote. This is where I'm going to invite you to this conversation as a man. I'm going to invite you to the conversation to go wherever you need to go with yourself. Say it, feel it, explore it, so that you can bring that and show that to both me and Marley, because we need it.
Okay.
And to anyone else that may be listening, yourself fundamentally. So that's the responsibility that I'm placing on Hamza's shoulder. Why? Because that's the responsibility that I see on my own shoulders. And that's what I think we're here to do at the PD Project. But if we dive into this, previously you were saying, your mum wants a lot from yourself. Your mum's been saying, okay, now's the time to knuckle down. Mm-hmm. I know your father would have probably been saying similar as well. Does that have anything to do with you not wanting me and Marley to talk almost down to you as a child? What's going on there? Is that what you feel like your experience is thus far?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. You know, I try to chat to older people. And they've always got knowledge and wisdom to give to me. But, you know, I don't enjoy something where someone's talking to me and I can't talk back. They're talking at me and they always think they're right. I'm not trying to have a go at these older people, but they always think they're right.
Mm.
Especially people like in my community, you know, and they don't take any other perception of anything else.
Mm.
And yeah, that can get very annoying.
Mm.
You know, I'm not trying to draw anyone out, but like when I talk to older people, that's why I had that conversation with you at the wedding.
Mm.
Cause I thought, you know, he's not too much older than me, where he's gonna start telling me about his whole life experiences. You know, he can also relate to me because it wasn't that long ago.
Mm.
And yeah, I've had a few bad experiences talking to olders.
Mm. Haven't we all?
Yeah.
Haven't we all? And one of the things that you said there, which is almost my key message for this conversation, if I had a message. You said they always think that they're right.
Because
they are. But they're right for them.
Okay.
And being right for them doesn't necessarily mean that they're right for you. And it's you that we're talking about. If you're going through the transformation, this is how can Uniski, how can Marley Gunter, how can Hamza Nazir, this is what I think we're about at the PD Project, this is what we're doing. Make being Hamza Nazir easier. Make being Hamza Nazir serve him and others and all of his responsibilities better. But I started with saying serve him, which means it doesn't matter if it's right for anyone else. Fundamentally, what Hamza Nazir needs to do is what's right for Hamza Nazir. We'll explore that. Marley, you usually have something to say by this point. What are you saying?
I'm saying I'm inspired, man. I'm inspired. Like, I'm seeing a lot of confidence that I don't have. You know, I don't have. I definitely didn't have that at 15. Just the ability to just... You're representing where you come from. I admire that, because one thing that's holding me back in my transformation process is forgetting where I'm from, forgetting my roots. And I'm seeing Hamza come in and he's speaking real. He's speaking. He's not... You're speaking where you're from. Like... I'm not really hearing many people coming and saying, yeah, I don't want to talk about the olders, but they're drawing me out. I think that's inspirational, because I always hold that side of myself off. Like, I've always tried to suppress that side of myself, being in university, like, oh, I can't speak like this. I can't say I listen to this kind of music. I can't do this. Like, oh, people are going to think this. Work. I don't like to speak in a certain way at work meetings. You know, parents, my parents might be like, oh, why are you speaking like that?
100%. 100%. That's one of the reasons why I saw it as a personal responsibility to try and have this conversation. Because that's the process, that can be the process of growing up.
But in a certain aspect, you know, changing the way you talk to fit a certain audience is understandable.
Important, yeah.
It's understandable. It's important. I think it's necessary. But there's a etiquette for this. There's a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it.
Okay.
And with myself and my transformations, I feel like falling on both sides of the line, I've kind of paid the consequences of both. Paid the consequences of maybe seeing a part of myself and then looking around and thinking people don't want this from me. Thinking this doesn't fit in here. And then trying to reject that part of myself. That's how I think we do it the wrong way. There's a right way to do it, which I'd love to be able to just give you the 10-step rule. I don't think I have it yet. I don't think I have it yet. And Marley, again, I usually do this. I usually cling on to things that people said. You said, okay, part of the reason why I'm looking at this man, Hamza Nazir, and I'm admiring him, is because you're representing where you come from.
Yeah.
Are you?
Not consciously.
Mm.
Not consciously, because I haven't been around a lot of intellectual people and a lot of prestigious people to be changing the way I speak.
Mm.
So unconsciously I'm speaking the way I'm speaking, but you know, I haven't had that. I haven't had what you've gone through, and maybe Eunice have gone through, to change the way you speak. In order, you know, obviously when I'm at school, I don't use slang. You know, to my teachers. Obviously when I'm with my friends, yeah, but I don't use slang when I'm with my teachers. I don't use slang when I'm with my mum. Obviously, I talk English with my mum, but yeah, I don't think I'm consciously trying to represent where I'm from.
And there's a time and a place for representing, and part of the reason I started there is because it's one of the easiest places to start with. How you speak. One of the things that I've grown up South London. I've also grown up black, and I've come to the point where I'm kind of just like, it took me going away to uni for people to appreciate, quote unquote, broken English and South London slang.
Serious?
Yes. When you're on the bus, when I went to a private school. When you go to a private school, when you're trying to make a good impression in London, people will look at you, say in a tracksuit, people will look at you using slang, and it's like, you're the scum of the earth, give it 5 years and you're in jail. Obviously, that's extreme hyperbole, but a lot of people will look down on that. And it took me going to Bristol, and people would hear slang from me and be intrigued. And they're like, oh yeah, I can tell you're from London. I think that's so cool. They just saw it as culture.
Serious.
Rather than all of that stigma that we put on it ourselves. And if I'm thinking back to a transformation, that's one of the things that I've noticed. All of that stigma that we put on it ourselves. Now, I grew up black. I remember I had a lot of conversations. I was about your age when I started growing out my hair. My mum didn't want me to grow out my hair. It's such a big thing. It's such a hair.
I know.
My mum didn't want me to grow out my hair. And I was kind of just like, hold on, what is going on? What is, this is my hair. And obviously, you have to hear her points. Eunice, there's a lot of people that are going to make assumptions about you, that are going to treat you a certain way, that are going to group you in with people that maybe you don't want to be grouped in with based on your appearance. And unfortunately, although that's not ideal, that's one of the situations we find ourselves in by virtue of a lot of the ways that other young black men may or may not have been conducting themselves. By virtue also of a lot of prejudice, a lot of whatever. I don't really want to talk about that. So you have to be aware of that.
Yeah.
Because as much as you may want to change it, you can't flick a switch and it change. But I was saying, I was probably about your age. I was saying, but hold on. If you did not want a black child, why did you birth me?
For crying out loud.
What else am I supposed to be? If you did not want me to have hair, there's hair removal treatments. Da, 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 da. If not, can I not just be myself? And there was a lot of frustration there.
Mm-hmm.
If not, this is hair. I know I may look like people that are up to no good. I'm up to good. I know what I'm up to.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm up to good.
Now, let me tell you something.
Mm.
So I'm, you know, I have very, very like curly hair.
Mm.
Yeah. And so my mum, when I was younger, always one over, never grew it out. Yeah. Because obviously, you know, my mum's South Asian. Mm. You know, we don't tend to usually have very curly hair.
Mm.
So growing up, I always had a one over, you know, never. Maybe when I was younger, if you remember me, I had curly hair when I was younger. But, you know, as I've gone through secondary school now, you know, I'm seeing other people grow out their hair. So I'm like, yeah, you know what, mama, I'm going to grow out my hair now.
Mm.
And I remember the first time I came home, I had like a mini high top, yeah. And I remember like my mum just looking at me and just like a bit disappointed. You know what I'm trying to say? And even this hairstyle that I've got in now, my mum, you know, I disappointed her. I can tell I disappointed her by getting this hairstyle. I don't know why, but, you know, it's for me, it's very common for people to have this kind of hairstyle. Mm. But for her, as you said before, it's what the people who have this hairstyle, what they represent.
Mm. I'm going to swing back round to you, Hamza.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to run this by Marley first.
Mm-hmm.
Hamza said he came back home to his mother as himself with his hair, and he could tell his mother was a bit disappointed. I'm just assuming that you have enough in your bank to be able to relate to similar Marley. How does that make you feel?
Like you're just not good enough. Like your very essence of who you are just isn't good enough. Like you've got to chop it off. Yeah, I've had similar with my hair. I used to go to a grammar school in Essex, deep, deep in Essex, in Chelmsford. So coming all the way from East London with my hair braided. Yeah, like yours, Hamza, all braided. Mm. Back when it wasn't fashionable. Now it's fashionable. Everybody wants to look like Pop Smoke.
Mm-hmm.
Pop Smoke.
That's what I asked for when I went to the shop.
2010 times, it wasn't really common. You know, it wasn't that common. And I remember, I thought it was nothing. Like, you know, you're 10 years old, 11 years old, you're just like, oh, I like this hair, like, I like having long hair. You think it's nothing. And then people would be like, you've got the devil's hairstyle.
Whoa,
you're serious? A criminal. Yeah, you're a criminal. You'd never get a job. Like, you're a thug. And that kind of permeates your self-image. So I went through school thinking I was like some thug who had no intellect, no, like, you know, I kind of just turned into like a quote-unquote Essex fop. Yeah, like, just like, you know, like tight trousers.
Like I fresh off the boat.
Fop.
Fop.
No, fop.
Fop,
you know, like
a,
I mean, it's the wrong word. Like a towie, like Joey Essex kind of.
What,
type.
Serious? What?
Yeah, like that. Like, you know, like chinos and tight jeans, because that's what I saw. Like the guys in my year, they had like Tommy Hilfiger.
Mm.
This was like, you know, like middle class Essex. So I tried to fit in.
Mm.
And it's like, who I am isn't good enough. I've got to be somebody else. It's damaging, man. It's
damaging. It's damaging because, again, this permeates your self-image. You start looking in the mirror now, thinking that part of me, of who I am, is not accepted, is not loved. People do not want to see that in myself. And I've been finding a lot of quotes which sum thing up well. And I know I can't put it better, so I'm just going to throw them out there. One of the things that that leads us to do is to start to lie by omission. To start to leave things out of the person that we present to the world. That's one of the things. If I am speaking to you as a 15-year-old, no, don't go there. Genuinely. Don't. That's one of the most dangerous things I think you can do when you start thinking, these people cannot see this side of me, so I'm going to hide it. And one of the things, this is the book that I'm reading right now, Radical Honesty, it's a quote from there. And it goes, when we reveal more, we have less to hide. When we have less to hide, we are less worried about being found out. When we are less worried about being found out, we can pay better attention to someone else. In this way, telling the truth makes intimacy and freedom possible. And for context of this conversation, I'm going to extend that. In this way, telling the truth and living authentically, even if that isn't what maybe others want of you, makes intimacy and freedom possible. That's what I've learned from a lot of maybe doing transformation the wrong way. And it can be crippling. So I'm going to pose that question to you now, Hamza. When you're coming home, another thing that I'm seeing, this wasn't really wanted from myself. I'm hearing a nice amount of slang. I know this boy goes to South. Like it makes me smile because I know, okay, this guy is kind of on what I'm on. There's something different. Like you can speak to, I speak like this most of the time. This is how I speak. But I grew up in Croydon. I can speak in a lot of slang. And it makes me smile. I'm seeing a tracksuit. I'm seeing a nice tracksuit. Again, a lot of people don't necessarily want you in tracksuits. I'm seeing braided hair. I'm sure you're coming home. I don't know if this is all the home. Mm-hmm. Or you're going places where you know, okay, maybe certain people wouldn't necessarily want that from me. 100%. How's that making you feel?
Literally, you know, I go visit some of my family. I have to hear all the comments, you know. I have to, you know, you have them aunties who like to talk. You know, you got to go see them sometimes. Like, I even might... I might not even get a haircut or I might not even braid my hair when I go see these people. I might take them out. And yeah, obviously, you know, it is. Because at the end of the day, all I'm doing is I'm expressing myself. Maybe if that... I'm expressing myself. But obviously, you know, it's influenced a lot by society and the environment that I grew up around. But when I come out of that environment... Like, even when I, as I said, but when I visit family, you know, I have to change the way I am. I can't speak how I'm talking to you lot right now. You know, I have to conduct myself in a different way. I can't wear tracksuit. Mom, what's mom be like? Put on some jeans. Put on a nice shirt. You know what I'm saying? And maybe that's because, you know, you wear your nice clothes to when you're going out. But at the same time, you know, I can buy a nice tracksuit. That costs a lot of money. But comfort for me is very important, but to her it's looking presentable for these people. And for me, wearing a nice tracksuit, maybe wearing a Nike tech to that thingy would be looking presentable, but obviously I can't.
But for most it's not. But for most it's, who is this guy, what does he think he's doing? And that undoubtedly will shut a lot of doors for you, which is why it's not as simple as I'm just expressing myself, the world needs to accept this and we move. Because that will shoot you in the foot. That will shoot you in the foot. But for me now, looking back to this, I'm thinking the best way to get the most out of me, the best way to give myself to others, is to make sure that I'm first and foremost representing myself, authentic to myself. Because when you don't do that, things start looking dark very quickly. Worst case scenario is I'm looking in the mirror and maybe I'm looking ream with my chinos and Tommy Hilfiger. And after a while, I'm just like, hold on, but this is not me. This is all I know how to be, but I don't really respect that person. Because I know that person has run away from who I knew I should have been, who I knew I wanted to be. But I don't know how to get back to that person. And say you're looking in the mirror, you come downstairs to your mother now, your mother's like, oh, you look great in your chinos, I love you. And you're accepting that. You're accepting that I love you. This comes back to that quote that I was saying makes intimacy and freedom possible. But you're knowing, hold on, it's almost like I'm holding up a target slightly out to my right. And your love is an arrow that's hitting that target. But I know I'm standing here. I'm not where that target is. That's not really me.
It's a good representation.
I know I'm standing here. I want some of these arrows to be hitting me. But you're seeing, oh, so many arrows hitting that target. Like, yeah, that guy's getting all the love. He's not you.
Come on. Yeah,
he's not you. That sits deeply. Yeah. That like hurts your soul. That genuinely hurts your soul. And then you start to get to this position where you can't be yourself. You can't. There's this conflicted love and acceptance of yourself. And you start thinking, I can't show myself in my fullest, in my entirety, to people. They love the target. They don't love me. If I go and dash away the target, they're like, hold on, mm-hmm. while I'm here, hold on, what's going on? This is not who I know.
I know.
This is not who I love.
It's sad.
It's sad.
It's painful.
Speak to me. Speak to me, Molly.
Yeah, when you like, I think Eunice, you were saying that a man's judged by his accomplishments. And one thing that's generated a lot of crisis for me is, if I didn't have any of these quote-unquote accomplishments that people see me to have, would they still respect me? And usually after I've achieved something that I wanted to achieve and people have respected it, I've actually been like, I wouldn't have been getting this well done and I'm proud of you, whatever, if that accomplishment hadn't been made.
Mm.
And it's just that people look at you like, oh, you're the only person that could feel sad after an achievement. Like, what's wrong with you? And it's like, nah, like, where was the love before? You know, where was, do you love me for me or do you love me for reasons? Do you love me because...
Shout out to the article coming.
Yeah.
I'm writing an article. Yeah. Do you love me or love me for reasons? But yeah, I've interrupted you, Marley. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you love me for me or do you love me for reasons? Like, if I wasn't doing these things that you rate, would you love me? You know, it's just... And as you go up this ladder in your life, I'd say at this stage in my life, I think I'm quite an accomplished man. I've achieved quite a few things in my life that I can stake pride to. And I look at it and I think, oh, gosh, I kind of wish I hadn't have done all of those things, because it's like, I feel like a lot of my relationships and my friendships are based upon me having this accomplishment. Like, for example, when I talk to Eunice, is it like, hang on, okay, if I hadn't done this event in the lanes, does he respect me? You know, and I saw a lot of that.
Probably not. Like, if I'm just being totally real, I would love to be able to say yes, but probably not in the same way, not for the same reasons. Because I think this is part of what we get at the article that I'm trying to write. Everyone just knows how to love for reasons. Everyone just knows how to say, okay, Hamza, my friend, my son, my nephew, my da 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 da. He's the person I want him to be, therefore I'm proud. Therefore I love, therefore... But when he's not now, it's a bit different. And for me, that's the point that I make in the article. That's loving for reasons. As much as I can want to just love, I'm not perfect. I'd like to take strides to get closer to that. Maybe if I can do some healing, I can share it with some other people. We can all get there. But Marley, yeah, if you're not running events at the lanes, if you're not da-da-da, I'm probably looking at you in a completely different way. That's part of the problem. Because then Marley needs to be the person where the target is. He feels like he's insufficient where he is, which he wakes up, he goes to bed knowing, I'm not where that target is, I'm where I am. And no one seems to be for where I am. Sorry, it's painful. Yeah. You were saying
it's painful. It's painful, man. It's actually just like it just brings tears to your eyes. It's just like, oh my gosh, like, you know, as you climb up, quote unquote, as they like to say it, competence hierarchies. You know, you women start coming your way, rare tear tear. It's like a lot of men, they're gonna be sitting there looking at you like, yeah. You're living the high life. Yeah. I wish I had this. You know, I've had these problems. I bring them to my mum. These problems. Ah, oh, I'm having problems with the women in Spain. And my mum started laughing. Like, what do you mean these are problems? Like, isn't this, you know, this is what every man would want? And I was like, no. Because it's like, do they love me for me? Like, you know, like they see a bit of chat, bit of swagger. I don't know. Like, oh yeah, a bit of confidence. Like, he knows where he's going. Take away all of that stuff. Like, where I'm actually at. The guy that's struggling to get up in the morning. The guy that's lonely, the guy that's really struggling. Where's that guy?
Is that chat? Is that confidence? Is that swagger you?
I think you've got to give yourself that respect. That is me.
Because we know one of the things, Hamza, you may experience it in due course. Mm-hmm. After a while, socially, you have to start performing.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried not to. One of the things uni taught me is I can be that guy in the room. I can be, like, I went to your house not too long ago. I was perfectly aware of the fact that I was saying next to nothing. And it was like, do you just hop into performance? Entertain the people, give them a few conversations, get some good chat going, get some good banter going, I realised at uni I could do that. Part of it is because me and Hamza are Muslims. I don't drink.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually have to work on your social game in a way that maybe others can substitute that alcoholic confidence for. And I realised I could do it. But after a while, I was like, am I supposed to be performing absolutely everywhere? So I'm asking yourself, Marley, is that confidence, is that thing that's drawing in all the galley, it seems, is that performing? Or is that where you're at? Because if it's where you're at, are you really looking and thinking, why are they all drawn to the target and not me?
It's a difficult one, because it's like, you don't wake up confident every day, like, nitty gritty, 24/7, your daily grind. It's like, I'm not loading up my laptop with, yeah, come on. Like, it's like, you know, the daily grind, it's, I don't want to get up today, my head's in a different place. This guy hasn't messaged me. This thing's fallen through. Like, the actual problems in my life and what's going on. It's like, no one's there. And it's like, I've realised there's very few people in my life that I can actually go to with the real me. The real, I have these problems.
Mm.
Like, it's difficult.
Mm. It's difficult.
And it's like, oh, yeah, like, people look at you like, oh, what are you complaining about? You know, you're living, you know, near the beach. Like, I've had that conversation with quite a lot of people. Like, oh, there's a lot of people that would love to be in your position. I'm thinking, mate, I'm talking to you. I'm lonely. I'm sad. I'm this. I'm that. Why are we talking about this idealized conceptualization of how you think I'm living? I'm telling you how I'm actually living.
Mm-hmm.
Are you there for that person?
And what I've realised in myself is the more that you perform, or the more that you become that target person, I'm running with this analogy, the more that you spend time away from exactly where you're at, the weaker that person where you're at gets. And one of the things that I did see is, again, ego's in the correct place. I don't know what this is saying about my ego, drawing this comparison. I saw a lot of similarities. I see a lot of similarities in yourself, Hamza, as to where I was at a similar age. And one of those is, I don't think you're a leader yet. I think you could be. I think you've got charisma. I think you've got confidence. I think at least now, you know who you are.
I don't think so.
To a certain extent. Because you never fully know who you are. But what gets in the way of that is bad transformation etiquette. And when I say, I'd say, you know who you are, I think you can be authentic.
I'll tell you this right now. Mm. Yeah. Even to a certain extent right now, we're all putting on a performance.
Absolutely.
Like, I'm not gonna sit here and talk to you how, like, I'm not gonna tell you, how do I say this? I'm not gonna sit here right now and just be like, yeah, you know, just be like 100 with, obviously I am doing that right now, but I'm not gonna sit here and talk like where I'm at right now is a whole different place to how I'm talking. Like, you know, you say you chat up, girl, you know, you know, you've got confidence, but when you're at home, you know, you're lonely. You know, I'll say this right now, you know, I have the ability to talk. I am confident in my...
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, but... Like, even though at the beginning of the podcast, like, you could see me messing up some of my words.
Mm.
I was going blank in the mind, but I've got confidence to talk.
Mm.
But am I a confident person? I don't think so.
I almost think that's what being confident is. People seem to think I'm like one of the most confident people on the planet. And if I'm saying, okay, you're correct, I've kind of got this idea that maybe being confident is like, there's no resistance to you being able to do and say everything you... I don't think it's like that. I don't think it's possible. Because I'm definitely not like that. However, when I be authentic... When I'm kind of just getting everything out of my mind and just being, do as Eunice would do, without thinking that, because that gets you in your head, that messes it up. But when you just be, I usually can do, and it usually works very well. That's what I mean about this confidence now.
Okay, so the confidence comes with being authentic.
The confidence comes with being authentic. And one of the things that I'm seeing with what happens to me, Marley's always saying... He's heard a thing or two about how I was at similar age to yourself, how I was at school, and he's like, we need more of that guy. He's like, where was that audacity? Where was that charisma that you make you smile, busting jokes, And what am I trying to say? The more you get in your head, the more you try to transform, the more you're less authentic, maybe because you know other people need this of you.
Okay.
The more you suppress that person, the weaker that person gets, to the point where it's a common place to be in, to try and want nothing more to be able to get back to that person. And I could be totally wrong, but when I'm looking at yourself, I think right now you've got one foot there, mm-hmm. where we're talking about a lot of people trying to get back to, but you're taking a stride out of that place. I don't know if you have a foot in another place, maybe, but you're taking a stride out of that place. And when I say, like, I look at you and I see confidence creep, that is what leaders are made of. What typically happens to everyone. You leave that place, and then you spend your time trying to get back there. The more successfully you get back there, I think the better you can serve yourself and the better you can serve others. The more people look up to you, the more just a positive presence you can bring. That's what I'm seeing when I see yourself. And one of the things that, if you're anything like me, suppresses that is when you start thinking, I'll ask you this question. When you're going back to people that count, obviously family will count way more than teachers, but teachers also count, friends mm-hmm. also count. But when you're going back to people that count, do you feel like they love and appreciate you for you or for reasons?
I think, you know, people got a lot of prejudice. Like, if they saw a black brother with tattoos and, you know, he's got a little swagger about him, and they haven't heard him speak. They've got this persona about mm-hmm. him, and you know, they and be real, they'll probably think he's someone who gets up to something.
Mm.
Yeah, and then let's say he talks with the most etiquettes and the most manners, then their whole perception switches of them, because they're able to talk how they're able to hit that target without fully hitting the target. They're able to hit the target. And you know, I can't even remember the question you asked me now, but
when you go to those that matter the most,
yeah,
do you feel what you may know actually happens could be different to how you feel? Do you feel like they love and appreciate you for you or for reasons?
Okay. That's very tricky. Because let's say my family, I know my mum and dad, my sisters. Whatever I do, I know there's unconditional love right there. Family, out of family wise, same thing. I'm very close. Maybe not on my dad's side, but definitely my mum's side. You know, I'm very close and they will unconditionally love me. They'll make their comments, don't get it twisted. They'll make their comments, but, you know, I think teachers-wise, you know, I've got to prove something to them. You know, I step in that class and say I've got a teacher that I know already. You know, they've definitely got something. The way I speak, you know, they may think that, they may have a prejudice against the way I speak. They may have a predetermined idea of the people that speak the way I speak, you know. Obviously, I haven't been... You lot have travelled out of South London or out of wherever you're from. You know, you've met people who don't even... Who appreciate us and appreciate people who talk like me. But, yeah, let's say I go to, like, a teacher. I've got to prove something to them. Like, I've got to prove to them that I'm smart. Like, they may look at someone who fits the frame of looking smart. You know, I don't know. He's got glasses. He's... I don't know, you know. And they may look at him and they think, okay, you know what, he's probably going to be this, and I've got to go in that classroom and prove to them. And yeah, I do think people look at me and
love and appreciate you for reasons. One of the things I know it's the same for me. Looking at my family, I know it's the same. Obviously, like, I come from a loving home, for me rather than for reasons. Do I feel like it's that way? No. And again, this is what I'm fleshing out in the article that I'm writing, Do Love Me and Love Me for Reasons. Because I've adopted that view of myself. Now, when I want something from myself, when I know I need to be someone, but and this could be positive. This could be a lot of it, even what we're doing here at the PD Project. When I know, like I said to you, let me do this, let me speak authentically, let me take that healing and share it with others. That's an aspirational. That's where I want to be. And now when I look at myself and I look at myself not getting where I want to go, I feel a certain way about that. And I've noticed that one of the things that I do, I think is natural, it's what we all do, but yeah, there's consequences to that, positive and negative, is when I see myself doing good, those are the reasons. And I do love myself because, alhamdulillah, I'm able to do a lot of good. I'm able to be, by and large, the person I want to be. When I'm not, however, I know to still love that person, but the way I view it is completely different. That's where shame comes in. That's where I start to try and hide that from people. Nah, I don't need to speak for that person. You don't need to see that. Let's keep that in the back. Let's keep that in the shadows. So do I feel this way because of how I view myself? This is a learnt behaviour that I'm projecting onto others now. And I'm saying, nah, I don't feel that at all. And one of the questions I'll pose to you then is, I would assume, okay, if I feel like others truly love me for me rather than loving me for reasons, am I transforming more for myself or more for them? Do you get what I'm getting?
Yeah, 100%, 100%, yeah. You've got to fit these people's molds in order for them to love you. Even changes, even like changing, you know, I don't know, but you know, when you become aware of women, you know, and not even that, or aware of society's ideas and, you know, what looks cool and what looks horrible. Are you doing it for yourself? Are you doing it for yourself? Or are you doing it for You know, are you doing it to look, to fit into society? And do you get what I'm saying,
Marley? Marley, do you think it's possible? Do you think it's like when we're talking about this, we're almost talking about this ideal where I can truly be doing all of these things for me. Mm-hmm. So say my mum says Eunice slang, Eunice hair, Eunice da 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 da, and I can say, okay, I appreciate what you're saying, but this is how I think it is. This is even looking back to my religion. I pray my prayers for me.
Yeah.
I don't pray my prayers for Allah. Yeah. For my mother.
Okay.
I pray my prayers for me. And okay, if I say I don't pray my prayers for Allah in the sense that Allah doesn't need them.
Mm-hmm.
I need them. That's what I'm saying. So for me with my religion, that's almost trained me to think you should fundamentally be acting for yourself. And that's almost given me the appreciation that when you do that, you can serve yourself and others the best. When I'm aware of what's needed of me from a religious perspective, who I need to be as Uniski, as a son, I can come to my mother as the best son. I can come to Hamza as the best friend, as Tamali as the best. So I've almost learned, okay, I need to be doing stuff for myself. Whether or not I say my whole life lives that out, a lot of things I think I am doing for other people. Do you think it's
okay?
Nah, 100%. I think it's okay. But I'm posing the question to Marley. Do you think anyone ever gets to that place? Do you think it's realistic?
Nah.
Like, because obviously it's part of why we're having these conversations is to set our expectations. What do we want to do or be? And I think you kind of need to level check and say, yeah, you can speak about best case scenario, but is it ever actually attainable / realistic in the first place, if you get what I mean? Marley, what are your thoughts?
Depends on who you think you are. As if we're talking, okay, Jesus, Buddha levels of authenticity, wholeness. We follow Jesus, or people follow Jesus, people follow Buddha because of they follow, I don't know, Jesus doesn't follow anybody. He follows God, he follows himself. He follows God and he follows himself to such a point that he is a religion on it. And follow me. Follow me in that. And it's... Isn't that the whole ideal of religion?
Yeah, what are you saying?
I don't know, maybe this is a radical view, but why can't people be the Jesus in their own lives? What caps?
What do you mean by that? I've had conversations with you, like you were talking about prophets, and just because of where we come from as religious people, I can take what you're saying, I can kind of understand what you're saying, but I'd ask you to clarify. Because, for example, if I'm Christian now, I could either be like, I hear what you're saying, or, whoa, you don't speak like that. What do you mean by being the Jesus? I'm assuming you don't mean I am literally some kind of holy being and people should follow me and I come with religious significance.
I think he means as a good person.
Absolutely. That's why I'm just teasing it out, just so that we know where we stand. What are you saying by that?
Yeah, like, obviously I know people, like most people, before, I don't know, analytical thinking gets engaged, it's like, oh my gosh, you can't say that. Da-da-da-da-da. And it's, obviously, I don't come from a religious background. My kind of education and religion has just been reading everything and finding what applies to me. And yeah, being, for me, how I've approached religion is like, I see it as a kind of psychological drama. Like, it's kind of like, it shows you the capacity and of a human being, the capacity of what human beings can achieve. If you really go within yourself to such an extent, you can quote unquote walk on water. Like, you know, like, you can perform miracles if you can go within yourself to such an extent that you're doing this for yourself and never anybody else. That's how I've seen it.
Is it
possible? I don't know. But I guess there's only one that profits. There are only, there's not many. So, like, for most, I guess it's impossible, isn't it?
I've got a question for you to bring up. I'm looking at the notes that we made beforehand. Just in case we can cover some of them, I'd want to get through them. discontent and crisis is some of the stuff that I wrote down. And I was speaking to you earlier, Marley, and we were chatting about, you posed the question, if I am here and other people want me to be somewhere else, to what extent do you change? To what extent, if I'm saying this is what I want for myself, and there's almost that conflict, there's almost that conflict between what I want for myself, or maybe what society wants for myself, or people that mean something to me want for myself. Do you remember that question, Marley?
No. Yeah.
I think that, you know, obviously I'm a lot younger than you guys, so you know, I may not know what's the best for me, and therefore I might have to take older people's advice. And,
absolutely.
And you know that, you know, that's okay, because you know, I'm gonna go through different phases where I want to be something. You know, you know, I think I wanted to be a footballer a couple of years ago. Now I want to do something different. You know, and you know, your parents telling you to do this, you know, because they know what's better, and they want the best for you.
Absolutely.
So I don't think it's always, you've always got to think, okay, you know what, is this really me being me? Because at the end of the day, do you know who you are at 15 years old? Do you get what I'm saying?
What was your answer to that question?
You never know who you are. I think it's okay. I think it's good to listen. People have different perspectives on you. It's useful to get that kind of outsider's perspective. But fundamentally, I think you need to be grounded. Only you can answer the questions. You know, a lot of people will come in with this idea of who they want you to be, because that's what they need, I don't know, to kind of fulfill their perceptions of reality. Because it's you're dealing with perceptions of reality. Like, you know, like for my mum, the reality was you're young and you're black and you've got your hair like, I don't know, like Snoop Dogg. You're a gangster. People are going to see you're a gangster. In her reality, it was nothing to do with not loving me per se, but her reality, in order for her to accept what I'm going to do and who I am, it's going to be... It's a blow to the senses.
Yeah.
It's a shock to the... Like, this is everything I knew, and here you go, swaggering around looking like Pop Smoke 2.0. Like, this is just unacceptable. This is... It hurts. The person on the other end usually hurts.
It's understandable.
Absolutely. It's unavoidable. I think to a certain extent, it's unavoidable. We live with enough people that have all of these different appreciations and priorities, that there is going to be certain points in our life where someone wants something of us that maybe we haven't identified, we don't appreciate why they want that, or we view things slightly differently. And this is where, for me, this is an investigation of, if I could avoid that, obviously I'd just find a way to avoid that, but I can't. So there's an etiquette here, and I need to figure out, okay, how can we deal with this in the best way possible? And Hamza, you raised a good point. You don't always know exactly who it is that you are, or what you want to or want not to be in this situation. I previously hadn't necessarily been thinking it that way. So a lot of the times, thankfully, with regards to the position that I'm in, I know exactly what I want. I know exactly who I'm trying to be or not to be. So through that lens, I remember when Marley posed the question, I was saying, okay, I don't really have an answer for you, Marley, but if I try and come up with one right now, I'd say I think a good place to start is to ask myself, in the request that this person is making of me, how much do I see myself in that? So, for example, say my mum now wants me to start wearing chinos and Tommy Hilfiger, but I'm saying, nah, I'm a road man. I come from the streets. Give me some tracksuits. I'm not necessarily trying to say I should do one of the other things. I'm thinking, one of the things that I think I want to be checking in with myself is, first of all, go and chat to this person and try and understand what they want, because that's how you learn where they're coming from. That's how you learn. But second of all, I think I need to ask myself, to what extent do I see myself as that person that they want me to be? So if you are proper, proper, proper road, and you know, I'm going to feel like a Muppet in Tommy Hilfiger.
Yeah.
I'm going to feel like an absolute Muppet in Tommy Hilfiger. What you do with that, I'm sorry, I still don't have the answer. I think that's an important question to ask yourself. Because after a while, you have to start saying, am I trying to be myself or am I trying to be other people? And I can be other people. Don't get me wrong. I can be what they need me to be. I think now's the time to try and be that person if I can say, yes, okay, I understand and I appreciate what you want from me there. I can fully be there rather than just holding the target out there, rather than not seeing any of myself in this and just thinking, who okay. is this? What life is this that I'm leading?
Mm.
But again, part of why we're having this conversation, it's kind of difficult because you could say, let me try and rock up to a job interview in your nice tracksuits and balaclava and whatnot. I'm sorry, that's just not going to slide.
Yeah.
That's just not going to... So yeah, sometimes you do... There's no like hard rule for this.
Nah, you know what? You know what? You know what? I'm going through this, as I've said before, I'm going through this right now.
Mm.
You know... You know, I also go to school out of the area. Yeah, mm. I go to school out of the area. Mm. And I come home and you know where I live?
Mm.
Okay. It's not as bad as I'm going to make it out to seem.
Mm-hmm.
But if I turn right and I go a bit further up, right?
Mm.
Come out my road, turn right, there's mm. a gang there.
Mm.
And they always chill there.
Mm.
I take a left and there's another gang.
Mm.
You know, my it's not as bad as I'm making it out to seem, but it is pretty bad, mm. you know? The area is the area that I've grown up in is bad
mm.
gang wise and mm. violence wise. And you know, that's why my mum didn't want me to go to school in the area, because mm. you go to school in the area, you know, you're the people in the area, you know, not you might make a friend here or there and mm. they're gonna have ties to a gang. And you know, I'll be real, some of my friends do,
mm.
you know. And so my mum's taking me out of school, put me in a school in a different area,
mm.
just so that I don't have that.
Mm.
And so I'm coming home, you know, obviously it's not that far out of ends that I'm thinking that I've got, like what you said, that you're changing your personality. No, no way.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe
that's not... It's not for you, big man. It's not for you. You're not on that.
No. But yeah, what I'm trying to say is that, you know, I'm also having a bit of an identity crisis where, you know, I've got to go from school that's in a different area. I've got to come home. I've got to chill with my friends in the area because I don't really chill with my friends from school a lot. You know, I got to chill with a man from my area who talk like how I talk. And then I've got to go back home to my mum, you know, and my mum and my family who also want me to talk in a different way.
Mm.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Mm. And you're almost pulled in multiple yeah, directions now. Yeah. And it's like, okay, who am I being? Like, mm-hmm. which one? Because there's legitimate ties to each. Like, you're not trying to say you weren't raised in the way that you are, and you don't see what maybe some other people see, maybe from home, what they want with that respect. I don't see you trying to reject your identity
mm-hmm.
or reject any of that. But you definitely do go through lives where there are several yous. Sometimes they can be in confliction. There are several, like, I do chill with my boys and ends. That is me. I also distance myself yeah. from them. And maybe I go to the mosque and it's completely mm. different. Or I'm at home and I'm completely different. And a lot of times when you're chopping and changing, it can be a bit disorienting.
Yeah. But you know what?
Yeah.
You know, I was with them guys. I was in the youth centre the other day.
Mm.
And, you know, after I said before, I've got a squad out there. I don't go to school with these guys. Mm. But these guys are my friends from young.
Mm.
And so I'm sitting there and we're all discussing, all a couple of us discussing, you know, what colleges we're going to go to.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go to this college. I'm like, I ain't even going to go college. I'm going to go sixth form. But for these guys, like, I'm not trying to act like I'm better than them.
Mm.
But at the same time, academically, I am better than them,
mm-hmm.
and it's hard for me to adjust. Not adjust. No. It's hard for me to not act like I'm better than them.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Because I don't feel like I'm better than them. But
it's hard, easy it? For your people actions start, to, yeah. It's easy when you're saying, listen, this is where we are, but I'm trying to be somewhere else. It's easy for people to interpret it as you're saying, this is where you are, and that's no longer good enough for me.
Yeah.
So literally. I'm leveling up and leaving you literally. Guys behind, which...
But I don't want to level. Mm. At the same time, I don't want to level. I want to be, if I could, I could. I would chill with these men because they're the funniest people. Mm. Like, but I know if I keep chilling with these guys, I potentially won't get where I need to be
mm.
in order to yeah, be man, successful.
It's like that. It's mm. difficult. You know, you just feel guilt. That's where I've been at with my journey. Just, you feel guilt. You know, it's like, I have a very non-settled mindset. I can't be in one place for too long. I've always got to be going on to the next. Like,
yeah.
And it's... People don't like it. You know, people don't like it, you know. Obviously, understandably, you know, no one wants to see their friends, like, change. Change is uncomfortable for everybody, isn't it? But I'm realising it's just that you actually have to just... know what's right for yourself and know who you're mm. being and
mm.
there is no other option.
There is no other option. Right, I've got one more point that I want to bring up with primarily yourself, Marley. I was writing about it earlier today and I asked my mum this question. I'm almost of the opinion that all change originates from some form of discontent. I don't necessarily think discontent is bad. I think discontent can be good. But I'm almost sitting here asking myself the question, if things were truly fine on every level, why would you change? And then I'm thinking, if we change, surely it's because we may be absolutely fine, for example, with how much we weigh. But then you say, oh, but I could be 86 kilograms rather than 85. And I'm sort of asking the question, is the reason why we then go and say, yes, I'm going to put on a kilogram of muscle, is because we have the aspiration and we say, yes, I want that to be me. And then when we're saying, yes, I want that to be me, are we almost saying, it's not a negative way at all, but are we almost saying, so therefore the person that I am or the person that I was needs to be, I don't want to say upgraded upon because it makes it sound negative, but we're going to move from that. Like how you were saying with your friends. I'm not necessarily leveling up, but we're just moving on mm-hmm. because the place, the level that you're at, you're saying, I would like different. So therefore, I'm going to move from it.
I disagree with that statement.
Okay, speak to me.
About change comes from discontent because I feel like I think when change is necessary, like, let's say, I don't know, I couldn't give you an example, but
mm.
when change is necessary, you have to adapt and you have to change. Mm. It's not because of discontent. It's because your environment is telling you, not physical adaptations, but let's say you're changing the way you speak. Let's say you go to somewhere, prestigious university, and you got to change the way you speak. I think you're not. That's not because you're discontent. Actually, maybe it's because someone else is discontent. But I think you're more adapting and you're changing because it's better for you in that situation. Do you understand what I'm saying?
And yeah, precisely. Better for you in that situation. Is that not the same of I want better for me in that situation? So what I'd get out of not changing, in comparison okay, okay, to what okay. I get out isn't I'm not going to settle for that.
Okay.
So I'm just not, and that's by no way one of the connotations of discontent is that you're viewing this as negative. It's not in any sort of way negative. But I was just playing around with, okay, if we think like that, then you can say all change comes from discontent. There's a positive way to do that, which may be saying, yeah, I'm fine getting B's, but then I'm going to look and I'm going to change. I know I can get A's. I know I could do better. So I'm going to flip the framework and say B's are no longer cutting it. Let's get some A's. And that could be totally positive. When it's negative, I think we can lean into crisis. And Marley's been speaking to me a lot about crisis. And one of the things,
just as you're saying,
I could be completely wrong. So yeah, after you, Marley.
Just as you're saying that, I'm just thinking, why the urge to improve?
I think that's human nature. Are you ever satisfied?
This is what I'm getting at. Are you ever satisfied? It's fine, objectively, you know, it's fine. But then that tiny little bit, it's not necessarily negative. That tiny little bit of shift the framework. This is no longer cutting it.
Mm-hmm.
So let's aspire towards something better. It's never a, this is a shambles, I hate this. Well, it can be. But what I'm saying is, when we try and transform, but we're driven by the actual negative, because there's a positive transformation and there's a negative transformation. I think the positive transformation is when we adopt that framework of, okay, I could do more than B's, so let's hit A's. The negative transformation is often crisis, where I'm looking in the mirror like, oh my days, you're not living up to your potential, B's are whack, and that transformation comes from a place of negativity. And that's often crisis. Mm. And one of the things that I've been saying is, maybe if I can avoid that, make sure you're calm where you are now before you move off. It's not always possible. But that's a tiny bit of context as to why I'm asking you, Marley. You're someone that said you've been through a couple of crises. You're someone that said you've gone through phases of your life which are perpetual crises. When you try that little framework on for size, what is that saying for you? What can you tell us about crises, about that? About maybe how you view yourself and the relationship you have with your discontent.
Negative. It's all negative. It comes from a negative place. It's, this isn't good enough. I need to do better. And it's, and then you get to this quote unquote better place, and then you just look at back at who you were with shame. Like, I can't associate with this. Like, what was this guy doing? This guy was just a waste, man. Like, like, he had no boundaries. He had no respect for himself. He was walking around in chinos like Joey Essex. It's just,
well, I think
you have this real.
I don't. If I look back at a photo of me a couple of years ago, I wouldn't think like that. I think that's what's made me get to the stage I am right now. And I don't look.
I need some of that.
No. Don't do that, because that's just the way I look at something. I'm not gonna think, okay, you know what? That's so embarrassing, you know, because people saw me like that. You know, I'm not going to sit here and act all embarrassed, because I made that conscious decision to be like that, to be how I was. To, I'm not going to sit here and say you know what, I shouldn't have done that. No, because that's what's got me to this place that I am right now. And I'll probably look back at myself and I'll probably think, you know, these Pop Smoke braids, they'll probably go out of fashion, and I'll be like, what the hell was I doing? You get me?
So how do you be content with what you're doing now? That's the big question. How do you be content with what you're doing now?
I think you're too focused on being content with what you're doing. You don't need to
trust.
I don't know.
Nah, go with that.
You seem too focused on being content with who you are right now. I think, you know.
Yeah.
I think human, as I said before, human nature is always to want more, always want to improve, whether you are a lazy person or not. You know, you're always, to a certain extent, trying to better yourself. Yeah. And what I mean by that is, I'm saying that, you know, oh, mine's gone blank. What I mean by your
what we were saying, where we came at this, we were saying, there's almost too much focus on being content with yourself.
Okay, yeah.
And it's human nature to want to improve, to want to move forwards.
I think you've got to sit back and enjoy it. I think you've got to sit back and enjoy the journey and stop working towards, you know, stop thinking, okay, you know what, I'll be content when I've done this. I'll be content when I get this job, when I'm earning this amount of money, when I got this degree, you know? And I think that will actually help yourself with your whole idea. You know, you may not feel so lonely, you know? If you've,
yeah,
if,
you're right.
Because you think that being lonely is causing you is a bad thing. If you get what I'm trying to say, enjoy it.
But how do you set goals? How do you set goals in the future and still be enjoying?
I think that's not too hard. You can have goals and still work towards them, but enjoy the journey, enjoy the process. You know, I think people work too hard towards a goal, and when they reach that goal, they're not content with life.
Absolutely.
And you know, you probably see all these billionaires and millionaires. You know, they're usually the, I don't know. They're usually the ones committing suicide. If you get what I'm trying to say.
Mm. You're onto something. Like this isn't really spoken about in most conversations, because it's difficult to do.
I was having this conversation with Raj the other day. When was it? Tuesday, Wednesday. So not the other day. Where he was saying, one of the things that we say, this the PD project, the personal development project. Mm-hmm. I've said personal development is about making being you just that little bit easier. And Raj was saying, oh, it was only after that conversation that I think I got what you were saying. He was like, I've been on this self-improvement vibe. I've been on this, maybe the wrong kind of discontent. I need to level up. I need to get better. I need to. Mm. And he had kind of thought that's what this was about. And I was saying, I fundamentally think personal development, making being you just a little bit easier, is saying, say we never get to change a single thing about ourselves. We don't get to just run away from who we are now. We have to sit right here with who we are for all of our merits and all of our shortcomings. I think personal development is about making being that person easier. It's about feeling a bit better about exactly who we are today, rather than thinking, here's all of the things that I need to do to level up, because once I've done them, I'll be 30, I'll be fine. Mm-hmm. Then I can accept. That's loving you for reasons.
You're loving yourself for reasons.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. loving yourself for reasons. I'm here. I don't know if it's possible. I'm just trying to actually be content with where I am now. And then we move. Because I think when you move like that, you're taking much more constructive steps.
Mm.
You're not running away from discontent and negativity. Because you'll just run. This discontent and negativity is just behind
Come
you.
Come on.
Like the carrot's not being dangled in front of you. It's being dangled behind you. No matter where you go, that discontent's just over your shoulder and you're still trying to run from it.
So how do you do it?
How do you do it? I have no idea.
As I said before, I think working towards the goal is healthy. You know, it keeps you ticking in life.
Mm.
You know, I think, as I said before, enjoying the process.
Mm.
You know, not working so hard. Because, you know, like, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, a lot of parents, you know, they come from their ethnic country. They come from their countries and they come to England. They work so hard to get their kids to where they want their kids to be. And they work so hard. They work all their life. Mm. And, you know, they think, okay, you know, once I get that kid married off, once I get that kid into uni, you know, I'll be happy. And let's say they get ill.
Mm.
And then your whole, you've done all this struggle, and now, you know, you're coming back, and you thought that you'd be happy at this time, but you're not. And I feel like that's why I say that, enjoying the process.
Mm.
I think that will help your mental health. And yeah.
How do you enjoy the process when the process is just burning fire?
I think enjoying the process is a bit misleading. I think enjoying the process is enjoying being yourself. I think if you, this is just me speculating, if you presented a man or a woman who's calm with who they are,
mm-hmm.
they would enjoy most of the processes. Unless you're actually subjecting them to some real torture or whatnot, I think they'll find a way to enjoy most of what they're doing. I think the man or the woman who really hates the process, I think you could swap out the process for 100 others, there'd still be that discontent there. I almost noticed that because Croydon's not Bristol. Croydon's not Clifton. Croydon, a lot of people don't necessarily want to be at Croydon. A lot of people don't want to be living at Yard once they've graduated. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be much worse than it actually was. I was walking out, Google Clifton. Outrage! It looks outrageous. I was living probably the nicest place I'll ever live. Hopefully not, maybe. Last year. Looked outrageously nice. Clifton in Bristol. Okay. And I was thinking, what, and I have to come back to council estates just up the road and drudgy South Norwood and Croydon. And I have to live at Yard.
Yeah.
And I kind of got here and I was like, hold on. This doesn't really matter. Like, I wake up and I enjoy what I'm doing, and I wake up and I enjoy who I'm being, and what I thought would be an issue just really wasn't an issue. That's why I kind of think enjoying the process is enjoying you.
That's what I'm saying, you know. I'm not going to say, you know, obviously I've got things that I want to do in life. I want to get married, I want to go travel the world, you know. But I'm open to the idea that that may not happen. I may be still living at Yard till God knows how long. And yeah, maybe I'll feel a bit of dissatisfaction with myself. Maybe my mum will feel some dissatisfaction. But at the end of the day, you know, I think if that's what it takes for me to be remotely content with myself, then you know I'm all right with staying in my house for another couple of years after uni. I think, Eunice, you know, when I was talking to you at that wedding, and you were saying about how you know what. I'm struggling to provide for my. I'm like, just take it, you know. Just take it as it is.
What do you mean? What was I saying?
So you were saying about how you're finding it hard to be independent. You've been independent for so long, and you're finding it hard to not be independent. Or not independent, but your mum's doing a lot of stuff that you usually would be doing for yourself. And I'm just like, you know, enjoy that, because. You shouldn't feel that. You shouldn't be so content. Okay, I have to live independently because I am this age and because I've been living independently. If you know what I'm saying?
I see it more from a half of the stuff I know my mum doesn't want to be doing. Like, my mum would rather I take care of her house than her take care. She's done it for way too long. She's been wiping my ass since I was born.
Mm-hmm.
I come at it more from a, again, similar to the. Like we talked about it with that quote about healing. You heal for yourself and then you can give to others. Competency. Once I'm able to run my own household, that's now what I want to be able to do for my mum, for my sister, for my this, for my that. So it's just a bit of growing into. I know I can, if you want to call it a burden, I don't necessarily see it a burden. I've strengthened my back so I can carry these burdens. Now let me carry them for all of the people that I care about. Let me try and actually contribute to you and make your life a bit easier, just like how we all want. But that's an aside. Is there anything either of you wanted to say in finally, or is that conversation?
It's done. Yeah, I've got nothing to say really. It's a pleasure.
All right,
pleasure.
Marley, I'm going to ask you one quick question then. Are there any, if you're summarising this conversation, if you're summarising some takeaways, are there any takeaways that you have?
Being content with where you are, first and foremost. Making peace with that as a priority so you can create constructive foundations for transformation. If you do otherwise, it's just going to be a bit crisis after crisis after crisis. I think I'm just crisis. I'm just going to have to accept myself as a Donny that has crises, and that's the only way to move on. Yeah, just I have crises. I let my emotions get the best of me. I tend to overreact. I tend to just hyper, you know, get myself involved into things that aren't serving me and sit there with that, because it's where I am. I can't really run away from myself forever.
Precisely.
You know, like, you've got on the Ryanair flight. Like, I realized just recently, you can take things too far with transformation.
Yes.
You can take it too far. You can take it to points where it's just like, yeah, you get a bit dangerous.
Yeah. You're running from yourself.
Yeah.
You're running from yourself. There's no foundations. What about yourself, Hamza?
You know, I really liked what you said about being authentic.
Mm.
You know, as a, you know, it's being authentic to yourself and being as authentic as you can at all points. You know, not having to change yourself up. You know, that's, and therefore, I thought you said, but being authentic can lead to you becoming a better person and being more content with yourself.
Mm.
And yeah, no. Being authentic, yeah, that's definitely something I'm gonna take on board.
My takeaway was, I forgot that I'd said this, but I said it, you know, when I came over to yours.
Yeah.
I was talking with your dad about transformation.
Yeah.
And I was saying, if you look at it as like your house, your castle, you're always going to need more from your castle. Like, you grow up, the world changes, what you want and need changes. You're always going to need to transform. Sometimes there's like a jump and it's like, okay, what was fine yesterday doesn't seem to be fine today. There's a lot of building that needs to be done. I was saying, yes, you do have to consistently build. And sometimes maybe you need to build so far in that direction that you're kind of thinking, let me just ditch the foundations and set up shop there. I was saying, I'm not too sure if that's the right way to go about it. I was saying, you may need to be over there, but I think we build on the foundations that we have today to try and get there, rather than just abandoning ship and running elsewhere. Because then we just find ourselves away from home, away from where we are, having to start again from square one. And often that leaves us feeling at loss. Sometimes it can be a slower, more painful, maybe more patient process of saying, yes, I need to be somewhere else, but I need to build on the foundations that I have today to get there, rather than just running off. They need me to be that. I want myself to be that. Let's just run.
Mm-hmm.
That's my takeaway. Right, history was made. 21st episode of the Personal Development Podcast. Thank you very much. I was joined by Marley Gunter and Hamza Nazir. I think that's that.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a different kind of pain. It's a different kind of pain. Crafting your happiness. Crafting your happiness. It's a different kind of pain. It's